You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Chris Molina. Coming up, we'll look at some great summer travel destinations around the state and ask you for your favorites.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news.
A Wisconsin woman is in federal custody after spreading terrorist information online. A state lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act is becoming a big issue in the race for attorney general. And a Green Bay paper company has announced a big investment in a new mill.
Robert Menser is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, Rob. Thanks.
Well, let's start with this story of a 45-year-old woman from Cudahy arrested for allegedly supporting a terrorist organization, in this case, the Islamic State. What do we know about this case?
Right. Wahiba Issa Dayes has two kids. She's 45 years old. She lives in South Suburban Milwaukee, and she is a recruiter for ISIS, or at least that is what the FBI has said. She's been charged in federal court with using Facebook and other social media to provide, quote, material support or resources to a foreign terrorist organization. They say that she shared information on making explosives, using biological weapons, making suicide vests, and that she had at least expressed an interest in traveling to the Mideast to join up with ISIS forces.
So what happens next in this case then?
Well, I mean, this is in federal court, and so the wheels turn slowly in federal court as always. There have been a number of other cases in recent years of similar sorts of charges in across the country, and the great majority of those are not yet resolved. But what it, you know, one thing it shows is it's a window into how these terrorist organizations may operate or try to operate recruitments, and a window into law enforcement's efforts to combat them as well.
And is there an accusation that she personally was coordinating with ISIS leadership, or is this, as we hear, people voluntarily using social media to try to spread the word, even if they're not in direct contact?
Right. Well, so it appears to be the latter, and we've said it, but it bears repeating that these are allegations, and we should be cautious about anything when what we have is right now is the government's version. There has not been a trial. What it appears is, one tip off is she's living in suburban Milwaukee. I mean, what it appears is that this was a world that she became involved with in online, and we know that ISIS itself, these organizations are somewhat dispersed, and social media, just participation in social media, is a big part of how the group operates, and there's a playbook for sort of bringing in people who are angry and trying to radicalize and indoctrinate them to the point where they either reach out to others, recruit others, or commit acts of terrorism themselves.
We'll watch that case as it develops. I want to turn to election races here in Wisconsin. We're spending a lot of time talking about the race for governor, but there's also going to be an election for attorney general of the state in the fall. And the state's lawsuit, signing on to a lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act, is becoming an issue in that race. What's going on? What's the back and forth between candidates on that?
Yeah, so I think maybe some people thought that we would not be having a big fight about the Affordable Care Act in the 2018 midterms, but if you thought that, that was very wrong, Rob.
I'm sorry, Rob.
There will always be a big political fight over Obamacare. So the latest. Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel signed on to this lawsuit against the law against Obamacare that 20 other Republican-controlled states are a part of. Governor Walker obviously supports this as well. There's not a very strong legal argument behind the lawsuit, or at least that is the view of the majority of legal analysts. But there's a very strong political reason to sign on to it if you're a Republican and want to, like, signal to everyone that you really, really hate Obamacare, which Republicans voters really agree with and like to see. In fact, from a political standpoint, the fact that it's a weak legal argument is maybe even more reason to sign on to it because you look tough and you look anti-Obamacare. The problem is the calculus changed this week or recently very dramatically when the Trump administration said, you know what, we agree, and we're not going to defend the law in court. That doesn't ensure a victory for the lawsuit for Schimmel and others, but it does make it more plausible. And so, all of a sudden, it is a live issue again in, well, in any number of races, that even the most popular parts of that law, the, you know, whatever, coverage for pre-existing conditions or other, you know, remaining on your parents' insurance through age 26, could actually go away if this lawsuit were to succeed.
And it seems like that's going to be the pre-existing condition thing is going to be the thing that's going to be the political argument. That was, as you say, one of the more popular aspects of the Affordable Care Act. There were less popular ones, of course. But that going away, that has some people worried.
Right, absolutely right. This has been the game from the beginning. Is, you know, if you support the law, you focus on the popular aspects, and if you oppose it, you can tear down the unpopular. But it does contain both for sure. So the immediate sort of this week context is the Democratic candidate for Attorney General is Josh Call. He's challenging Schimmel, and he spoke at a Milwaukee rally about sort of Save the Affordable Care Act, and pointed out this, you know what I mean, it is a fair, it's fair enough that Schimmel, if Schimmel's lawsuit succeeds, that these popular provisions of the law would go away.
Talking to Rob Mentzer from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, looking at some of the top news around Wisconsin this week. Rob, in Green Bay and the Fox Valley area, the paper industry has a big historic presence. There's been downturns. Green Bay, though, seeing a big development. What's going on?
Yeah, Governor Walker was in Green Bay with a bunch of local leaders, and the big announcement was Green Bay Packaging is going to spend $500 million in Brown County to build a new paper mill to replace the 70-year-old paper mill facility that they have there, with a bunch of upgrades and plans to hire up to 200 more people in the next 4 years.
And they're touting that and construction jobs, those together having a pretty significant impact, people are hoping, on jobs in that area.
Right. No, it's a massive project. The construction jobs themselves, which obviously start up much sooner, that's maybe 1,000 workers to work on the project to replace the current mill. My colleagues at the Green Bay Press Gazette wrote that this would be one of the largest single business projects in Brown County's history. So it's a big deal.
There is some aid coming to the project, right, at the state, county, and city levels.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, right, there are tax incentives, you know, the usual package, I suppose. But I think it was received as a real, it's sort of like no joke. You know what I mean? A project of this size is a significant economic boost to the area.
And is there a timetable for it?
Well, I mean, so it's the construction would start sooner. The ultimate number of 200 jobs added, that's in the next 4 years. It will take at least a couple years, I think, for the construction and to cross over to the new facility. One thing that was kind of cool, this is like just like a little unrelated thing, but it was a tidbit that I found sort of interesting, is they're also proposing to switch from coal power in the current mill to natural gas in the new one, which the company says is going to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 50%.
And Rob, before we let you go, I want to follow up on a story we talked about with you in the past, the Athens High School baseball team. You had told us one of their teammates, Tucker Westfall, died in an accident days before their sectional tournament. They won games to get to the Division IV state tournament. So give us the rest of the story.
Go Blue Jays! They on Thursday, the Athens baseball team won its second straight title. It had been an emotional period for the team, and you know, something Athens is not far away from me, where I am. I know some people who are from there and who had we had followed the story, and so yeah, it was emotional in the postseason. It was quite nice that they to see them take home the trophy.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, thank you.
That's Rob Mentzer, statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joins us each week for our state news roundup. School is out. The weather is getting hot. It is summer, which means it's time to get our summer travel plans in gear and take the opportunity to get to know our own state a little better.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. Where are you going in Wisconsin this summer? What are some of your favorite places across the state to visit during the warmer months? Is there a special place or event you plan your summer around? How about a lesser-known landmark you'd like to share? Call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We asked around the office here to see what our colleagues were up to this summer. Here's some of what we heard.
I grew up in a small town in northeastern Wisconsin called Shiocton, and each year they have a festival in the fall called the Cabbage Chuck. It's the world championship cabbage chuck, actually. So everybody in the town gets together and sees who can build the strongest and biggest catapult to try to launch these cabbage across a gigantic field. It's a pretty big deal in the town. People come from all over. The catapults are built out of really crazy materials. Like, some people spend thousands of dollars building their catapults.
My family has a cabin on a lake outside of Stevens Point, Wisconsin, between Rosholt and Iola. My grandpa built the original cabin in 1966. I grew up on that lake in the summer, and now my daughter gets to go and swim in the same lake and have all the same fun. And so it's really cool to watch the generations sort of pass through that place and experience all the same fun and games and enjoyment.
For the last 6 years, I've gone to Chautauq, Wisconsin for their Liberty Fest, which is a 4th of July bonanza, complete with a 4-mile run called the Fishy Four, fireworks, a craft fair, an airplane fair, and pretty much all-day boating.
So we'll probably head out to Old World, Wisconsin. You can camp there, and then that's really a lot of fun because you're kind of, you know, living on the land.
Every year, my biking group goes from Madison to Devil's Lake to freedom and back.
So one thing I'm doing for the first time this year is going to a music festival called Blue Light. It takes place in Highland, Wisconsin. It's basically just 2 days of weird independent music from around the Madison area, but also beyond.
We're actually, as a family, going up to Spooner, Wisconsin for the 4th of July parade. This parade I went to as a kid, and now I'm taking my kids to, and they have the best parade because they throw out a ton of candy. You can bring like 3 bags and it'll be full of candy, and it's amazing.
How about you? Join in with your summer plans. Do you have a place you go, a place you camp, a cabin, a lake you go to each and every summer? Is there a new place in Wisconsin that you are planning or hoping to check out this summer? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
For more on summer travel plans in our state, we're joined now by Maureen McCollum, our colleague and executive producer of Wisconsin Life. Maureen, hey, how's it going?
It's great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we heard from our colleagues there. We haven't heard from you. What are you doing in Wisconsin this summer?
Well, like a lot of people, I think a lot of my traveling is focused around visiting friends and family. So I'll get to Milwaukee and go to new fun restaurants, go to different festivals, hit up Lake Michigan, and then I'll find myself back in La Crosse where I lived many years. And I love just traveling up and down the Mississippi River and visiting with people. I find myself at random music festivals, too, throughout the state. So it should be a pretty jam-packed summer.
And I've run across this idea a couple times lately, and I love it, the idea of being a tourist in your home state or even your hometown.
Yeah.
We were talking to somebody, and we heard about a traveling solo in New York. My brother and his family have said, hey, we live in San Francisco. We got to check out our local stuff. It's a great idea to kind of open your eyes to the stuff that's in our backyards, basically.
Oh, totally. I mean, you could go to Washington, D.C. and go visit all these museums, but then you forget, like, we have amazing museums here in Wisconsin or all these other different natural wonders that you can see.
So I know you said that you enjoy traveling up and down the Mississippi River. What are some of the things that you like to see in that part of the state? Because that's an area that I don't know as well, and I wish I knew it a little bit better. What do I need to see when I head out along the river?
Everything. No, one of the great things about the Mississippi River is, you know, I mean, there's all these just cute little river towns along the way. You know, for me, I would start in La Crosse, but you can head north, stop in Fountain City. There's this wonderful, I think it might be one of the oldest Irish bars in the state. You can go and get food there. There's a bunch of different places to just, like, look out and see nature. I'm kind of a locks and dam nerd, so I like getting out and seeing these structures. So, yeah, I mean, you head north, south, like, you can stop wherever you want, and there's going to be wonderful food and amazing people.
And it's a lot of fun just being on the river. In many cases, there's bluffs. The scenery when you look away from the river is pretty cool. And you like the locks and dams. I like seeing the barges and trains go up and down. It's just a kind of a nice... a vista with lots of different stuff to see.
Oh, completely.
The architecture too. It's like you're in a different state, kind of.
Yeah, and if you go a little more inland, one of my favorite places to go every summer is House on the Rock. Very polarizing place. It's completely wacky, but that's why I love it, because you go there, you can, you know, especially if it's a really hot day, you can get away and explore just the different crazy collections that this guy put together. And then, you know, right outside there, Spring Green, there's Taliesin, the Frank Lloyd Wright House. Usually if we go to House on the Rock, we end up camping at like Governor Dodge State Park or somewhere near there. So
when I think of Wisconsin, one of the words that comes to mind sometimes is quirky. And in terms of the stuff that, you know, we're talking about here, House on the Rock is one. Dr. Evermore's Forevertron is one that I really like. Can you talk about some of the quirky things in Wisconsin that you either really like to go and see or that you're hoping to go and see this summer?
Yeah, House on the Rock, you know, pretty quirky. Other quirky places in Wisconsin, I don't know. Sometimes I find, like, if I just stop at a random, like, towny bar or like a restaurant, not to say it's quirky, but you end up maybe trying some new type of food that you weren't really expecting. Just some of those roadside diners that have not died here in Wisconsin.
We're talking about great things to do in Wisconsin in the summer, and you can join us if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Do you have a place you love to go in the summer? Is there some place you've been wanting to check out? It's on your Wisconsin bucket list, or a place that you think everybody else should go to. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We got some hot weather coming up, and we were kicking around some great hot weather cool things to do in Wisconsin, and I came up with a couple. Cave of the Mounds,
because
it's underground, doesn't care what the temperature is outside, and Parfrey's Glen near Devil's
Lake. Beautiful.
It always stays substantially cooler, at least when I've been there, substantially cooler than the rest of the state.
Yeah, maybe if you want to avoid the mosquitoes, because those have not been very fun lately. you know, there's amazing museums in Milwaukee. There's the Discovery World. There's the Art Museum right across the street. You know, just a couple blocks away, you have the Milwaukee Public Market. And if you have a big family or people with different tastes, you can get whatever you want to eat there. And it's just such a fun place and air conditioned.
So maybe not the weekend to check some of the outdoor places out, but I know that Wisconsin is a place where if you like parks, you're going to feel at home here. County parks, there are like 700 of them. State parks, there are 70 plus places in Wisconsin to check out. Where do you like to go? I know we talked about the Mississippi River a little bit, but outside of that, where do you like to go for outdoor fun in the states?
I like canoeing some of the smaller rivers in Wisconsin too. I know I've been a little heavy on my southern destinations today, but I love canoeing like the Kickapoo River or the Black River, just because they're a lot smaller, they're easy to navigate. It might be a little quiet based on the weekend.
I want to bring on a caller now. Trevor is with us in Madison. Trevor, hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. What do you got for us, Trevor?
Well, you guys were talking about quirky roadside attractions, and you mentioned Fountain City and River City or River Towns. There's a place called The Rock in the House versus The House in the Rock in Fountain City. Unfortunately, it's a tragic story of a rock slide that happened twice, once around 100 years ago. It slid down the mountain, and I don't think it killed the husband at that point, but then it happened like 8 years ago or something like
that.
So it's someplace you can just stop, the self-guided tour. You just make a little donation in the donation box. That's a little fun thing to do if you're in that area.
Yeah, it's literally a huge boulder in the side of this house.
Well, and, you know, Trevor was talking about just roadside attractions and places that you can check out. And I was thinking about how a couple years back I was driving through an area of the state that I wasn't familiar with. I drove through Dickeyville, Wisconsin, and I discovered the Dickeyville Grotto, which it was amazing. It's, you know, built out of, you know, recycled glass and other parts that this person found. But, yeah, that's part of the fun of driving through Wisconsin is just seeing these things. Mm-hmm.
Let's bring on another caller now. Matt is with us in Eagle River. Matt, hi. Matt, are you there? Okay, Matt's breaking up. Let's go to Ann in Madison. Ann, hi.
Hi. So I love Washington Island. It's fun to take the ferry over. They have several very unique beaches. It's peaceful. It's quiet. It's cheap. And the people on the island are very friendly and accommodating.
And thank you so much for sharing that. I'll throw in a Madeline Island if you want an island in Lake Superior, too. I mean, that's a pretty famous one. That's not, like, out of the way.
But the people on that island are super, super friendly, so welcoming. You know, and Washington Island's nice, too, because so many people go up to Door County for a week or a weekend here in Wisconsin. That's a nice little day trip if you don't want to stay there the whole time.
And one part of the state that we haven't talked a lot about is northern Wisconsin. And I know on my bucket list for the summer, I want to get up to Copper Falls State Park, and I want to go to Big Top Chautauqua. Is there anywhere else, Maureen, in that part of the state or anywhere on the way, perhaps, that I should consider checking out?
Well, one thing on my bucket list, Chris, is I have never camped in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest. I've driven through it, but I'd really like to camp there for a few nights and just kind of explore some of those towns up there a bit more.
All right. Well, I'll have lots of fun this summer. Maureen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Maureen McCollum, executive producer for Wisconsin Life. We've been talking about our summer travel plans and yours around the state of Wisconsin. WPR's Capital News team put together profiles of 11 candidates vying to be Wisconsin's governor, 10 Democrats, and Republican Scott Walker, who's running for re-election. You can listen to profiles of all the candidates for governor at WPR.org/governor. We'll talk with WPR reporters Sean Johnson and Laurel White about that series in just a bit, but first the final installment. Dana Wachs is a Democratic state lawmaker from western Wisconsin and a trial lawyer. He says that combination makes him a perfect advocate for regular folks in the Capitol. Laurel White.
Harvey Jo Lauer first met Dana Wachs at a very difficult time in her life. She had just been in an awful car accident and had been left paralyzed from the waist down.
I was in the hospital for 107 days, and I was doing speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and then I was also doing my schoolwork on top of that because I wanted to graduate with the rest of my class.
Lauer was a sophomore in high school when the accident happened. She says she first met Wachs when he came to the hospital to visit her. Her mother had hired his law firm to represent her in a lawsuit following the accident.
You know, I always felt comfortable that I could cry or I could scream or I could swear or I could do whatever I needed to do to express myself, and he was always supportive of that.
Lauer says Wachs was comfortable sitting with her in her most vulnerable moments, and she thinks that says a lot about who he is. And he made her laugh.
Total dad jokes, you know, I think that's important for people to know.
Wachs says his work as a trial lawyer, which he continues to do, is a lot like his work in the Capitol. He says he sees both jobs as opportunities to fight for people who don't have a lot of power.
I don't represent the big corporations. I represent regular people in terrible circumstances in life.
Dan Freund is a longtime friend and colleague of Wachs. They first met when they were young lawyers practicing in Eau Claire. Freund says Wachs didn't talk about running for office in those early days, but he's not entirely surprised it happened.
I think to some extent it's a logical extension of his work representing the injured parties against big insurance companies and big companies and being an advocate for those who couldn't necessarily advocate for themselves.
There is a benefit to being a trial lawyer for a Democrat like Wachs. They're often helpful to Democrats, especially when it comes to fundraising. But WisPolitics President Jeff Mayers says Wachs may have struggled because another attorney, Matt Flynn, entered the Democratic race for governor.
I think that, a lot of Milwaukee attorney money may have gone Matt Flynn's way.
Mayers says Wachs was considered an early front runner in the Democratic field, in part because he announced his candidacy early, but he struggled to stand out in the 10-candidate primary.
Some Democrats have been saying that campaign is underwhelming.
Walks contributed about $270,000 of his own money to his campaign last year, according to finance reports. That's more than half of what he reported raising. Walks has tried to distinguish himself from other Democrats in the governor's race by highlighting his fight against Foxconn. Every Democrat running for governor has criticized Foxconn, but Walks sits on the board of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which negotiated the deal. That put him on the front lines to attack it.
I think it's a terrible squandering of state resources. $3 billion spent on one company buried deep within one industry is a heck of a lot of eggs in one basket.
Walks voted against the contract, saying it didn't have enough protections for Wisconsin workers. Walks says Foxconn is one of many examples where the needs of regular people are falling on deaf ears at the state capitol. He says it's about time for that to change, and he'd be the governor to change it. Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, for more on the race for governor, we have Sean Johnson, WPR Capitol Bureau Chief, and Laurel White, WPR State Capitol Reporter, both in the studio with us. Sean, Laurel, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Thanks for having us.
Well, what, Laurel, was the goal in putting together this series of candidate profiles?
So what we really wanted to do with this series was answer the question, why is this person a thing politically? Sort of what's given them the standing to run for governor? What's their political foundation? So it was a kind of a broad portrait of each of these individuals who some people might not be incredibly familiar with.
And Sean, did you see common themes emerging, let's say, among the 10 Democrats?
One common theme is, you know, the role that timing has played in their careers in one way or another. You know, for example, Paul Soglin, mayor of Madison, he has a 50-year career now, so he's done a lot of things. And a lot, there's a lot of reasons he could point to and say, "There, that's why I'm a candidate for governor." But he sort of seized on the timing of a protest in 1967 when he was among the demonstrators who were hit by police. And he used that to launch a city council career and then a career as mayor. And here he is on the statewide stage. So you see different examples like that from these candidates where they had a moment in time and they seized it, or in some other cases where timing hasn't worked out for them.
I want to get into the Democratic candidates more in a bit, but I want to talk about Governor Walker and this sort of this weird balance here. We've got one clear Republican candidate. It's going to take something really weird for Scott Walker not to have that R by his name on the ballot this year. What is the dynamic of the race with one person who the other side knows they're running, and then he and Republicans have 10 potential targets here that they're thinking about?
Well, so Sean did the feature in this series that was focused on Walker, and I thought it was incredibly interesting. What he decided to focus on is sort of who Walker is right now, kind of in this moment, because people are familiar with Scott Walker's political foundation and kind of why he is who he is. So we didn't need to tell that story the way that we felt like we might need to with some of the Democrats. So Sean talked about who Walker is right now, and that person, that candidate, is someone who's really focused on positive messages and a positive campaign and saying, here's what I've done for the state of Wisconsin. He's released 4 campaign ads now that are all positive messages. These are initiatives that I've launched, things like that. So he's had the opportunity to sort of have that narrative that I think he's counting on voters responding to that in a different way than they do to oftentimes the negative messages that people hear and get frustrated with in politics.
And that's not to say that the governor's never done a negative campaign ad. I mean, mm-hmm. he did 4 years go against Mary Burke. And in a few months, we'll see what this campaign looks like, either from the governor or his allies. I'm sure the tone will change. But right now, when the Democrats have their money spread thin, he's able to do this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Republican, who do you run a negative ad against? Because 90% chance you just wasted your money.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, let's look at the Democrats now. You looked at the ways that I think a lot of the candidates are hoping to define themselves as standing out in this crowded field. Do you have thoughts? We're in unprecedented territory, I think, here, right? We don't have a lot of 10 candidate primaries to draw from.
Right.
What are you seeing?
I think we were surprised kind of at how... Maybe we've been doing the series for too long, but I think we were able to, spot differences in each of the candidates. Like, there is some way in which all the candidates are somewhat unique. They are very similar on most policy issues, I think, but in terms of why they got here, they're a little bit different, all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are commonalities in terms of, like what Sean said, the policy positions, but it is interesting to see some of the same arguments that they're using in terms of, you know, I am from this part of the state, like Dana Walks and Kathleen Beinhout, both talking about how they're from Western Wisconsin and how that can help them appeal to a broader swath of voters than Democrats have maybe appealed to in the past. Or Tony Evers saying, I've won statewide office, so I can appeal to people outside of Madison and Milwaukee. So you have these themes that a number of the candidates are hitting, but not all of them. And then you have things that they all have more broadly in common, like, you know, not being crazy about the deal with Foxconn, for example.
And early on, and I think this is going back to last year, the story was, oh, some high-profile Democrats who might run aren't. And Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee kept that story going for a while, actually up almost to the Democratic convention this year. And people like Congressman Ron Kind, I think his name was bounced around for a while. And Republicans were saying, aha, another candidate isn't running. And now all of a sudden everybody came out of the woodwork. Maybe not those, you know, top names on Democrats' list, but a lot of people.
It is sort of crazy how that narrative flipped so dramatically over the course of a year. Last year, the Democratic Party was, you know, Republicans were saying Democrats in disarray because they couldn't find a candidate for governor. You mentioned everybody who dropped out. And if the party is in disarray right now, the Democratic Party, it's because they have too many choices. You know, some people would say, you hear a lot of Democrats say that's good. We have a lot of people who are interested in running for governor because they think Scott Walker is beatable. But it is, you know, it's challenging for them in a way that there's really no playbook on how to do it.
We're talking to WPR reporters Sean Johnson and Laurel White about their 11-part series profiling candidates for governor.
And we want to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. Have you decided which candidate you'll be voting for? Who's got your attention? And what issue is most important to you in this race? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Chris Molina. We're continuing our conversation with WPR reporters Laurel White and Sean Johnson about their series profiling all 11 candidates for governor who will appear on the primary ballot on August 14th.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you decided already who's going to get your vote for governor? If not, what do you need to hear? If you're planning to vote in the Democratic primary, what kind of things, what issues, what background is motivating you? Looking ahead at the general election, how are you weighing the option between Governor Walker and player to be named later? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. To your calls now, Brandon is with us in Madison. Brandon, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I hadn't really heard very much on the radio or, you know, even really social media about this candidate, Matt Flynn. He's kind of an underdog. And, you know, as I just moved here, I've done a little bit of research. And I got to say, Matt Flynn looks like a great candidate. He's got a clean record for legalization, of course, against Foxconn, which doesn't set him apart very much. But I wish he'd get a little more coverage. He's a smart guy. He's got a lot of good ideas.
Brandon, thanks a lot for the call. You covered all the candidates, so you can check out Brandon the feature at WPR.org/governor. Sean, I think you covered Matt Flynn.
I did, yeah, and it was an interesting feature to do for sure. He mentioned the legalization issue there. Matt Flynn has
come out of marijuana.
He's come out very vocally in favor of not only legalizing marijuana, but in favor of I guess commuting the sentences of people who are arrested for nonviolent marijuana offenses. Matt Flynn, I got to admit, I didn't really know anything about his political career when we started this, but he has run for office four times before. And typically when you have somebody who's run for office four times in the past, they get labeled perennial candidate, right? And that's not a good thing. But Flynn had some really close calls earlier in his career. In 86, came up just short in a primary for U.S. Senate. In 88, he could have been congressman, if not for a variety of factors. He was almost there in those races. He went on to have a long career as an attorney for Quarles and Brady, where he represented clients, including the Milwaukee Archdiocese. That helped make him a factor in Milwaukee politics. At the same time, his representation of the Archdiocese has come back to haunt him a bit in this campaign from groups who say that should disqualify him in this race. So he's got a complicated and long story in politics. So check it out.
And Laurel, Brandon described Matt Flynn as an underdog. I mean, can we say based on, I don't know, polling or fundraising or whatever, can we say there's a favorite and underdogs in this race?
It's so difficult right now, Rob, because we don't have a ton of data to work with. We had one poll from Marquette University, which is kind of the poll that we look to most frequently in Wisconsin. And that was several months ago now. We're getting some new poll numbers next week. So that'll give us a little bit better of an idea of kind of where the electorate is on this race right now. The other things that we've looked at are things like straw polls, but those aren't scientific either because they're usually such small groups of people and very specific groups of people, like the individuals who attended the state party convention, for example.
And we'll be inviting Charles Franklin with the Marquette Law School poll. I don't think we have that locked down yet, but we're hoping to talk to him about the new poll. And of course, we'll be bringing the candidates or inviting all the candidates on the WPR talk shows here on the Ideas Network. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Alan is with us in Madison. Alan, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what did you want to tell us, Alan?
I wanted to say that I'm supporting Mike McCabe in the Democratic primary because he has the most credibility in terms of his career of fighting the big money in politics, which is kind of the gateway to all sorts of issues from climate change to legalization to just about anything you could name.
Alan, thanks for the call. Laurel, did you do the Mike McCabe piece?
I did. And so what Alan is talking about there is Mike McCabe's history working for a couple different watchdog groups. He was one of the founders of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign around when that group started. And that group focuses on tracking money in politics in Wisconsin. So he was kind of the go-to guy for a number of years to talk about financial misdeeds of people in either party, Republicans or Democrats. And that's actually interestingly been part of some of the pushback to McCabe is that he worked for Republicans in the state capitol. He hasn't said that he'll for sure endorse the Democratic nominee if it's not him. So he's got a little bit of an independent streak there that's caused some trouble for some people in the Democratic Party. But he definitely has made a name for himself in this race on that campaign finance issue.
And he's billed that his pitch to voters is partly that he's independent of the Democratic Party in some ways. Is that right?
Indeed, yeah.
Thanks, Alan, for that call at 800-642-1234, talking about the race for governor here in Wisconsin. Crowded field of candidates. You can still join in with your questions for our guests, Sean Johnson and Laurel White, our state capitol team here, or who you're thinking of voting for in the election, 800-642-1234. Sean, the big dynamic, people are wondering if it's going to happen here in the state, in the governor's race, in the legislature, this idea of, is there going to be a blue wave? One person who's worried about it and been vocal about it is Governor Walker himself.
Yeah, for him, it is a tool that he's using. I mean, he's trying to warn his base, wake up, or this could happen to us. It's a motivator for him. It's something that he used in the recall election, where it wasn't a blue wave that he talked about then, but he would talk over and over again in that race about, you know, out-of-state interests are going to come in here and try to undo our progress here in Wisconsin. You hear the same themes from Walker this time around, a similar tone. And you get the sense that he's trying to get the base to take similar action.
And Laurel, in writing and talking about the candidates, what were, for the Democrats, what were some of the concerns they raised about Governor Walker? What are some of the points of attack?
So Foxconn was a big one, obviously. It's interesting to see how the different Democratic candidates talk about Foxconn. I asked each one of them that I profiled whether they thought the contract could be renegotiated, or what could actually be changed in terms of that deal at this point, now that we're, you know, so far along with Foxconn. And different people have different ideas on that. You know, a lot of people say that we're pretty locked in. Others say that you kind of keep an eagle eye out for Foxconn violating any terms of that contract, and that's when you can really make some big changes. So it was interesting to see how they were similar, but also had some key differences there when they talked about that issue.
And Sean, how about the style of campaigning? What are people doing? It seems like we're seeing everything from supper club tours, people trying to barnstorm around the state. I don't know if we're seeing a lot of ads yet in key markets. What are the campaigns doing to try to set themselves apart?
To my knowledge, you're not seeing ads yet. You're not, because that money is spread so thin among these candidates, and it is still June. I'm not sure how much attention people are paying to an August 14th primary at this point, but you're not seeing these campaigns up on TV, and I doubt you'll see all of them up on TV before primary. And so you see digital ads. You see, it could be as simple as just showing up to more forums than the other people. Some of them have a pretty aggressive travel schedule. You alluded to a supper club campaign there. That's something that Paul Soglin has said he's going to do, where he's not going to try to force himself on people so much, but, you know, show up at places, kind of let them come to him. But he's doing that at a time when you've got a number of these other candidates who are being very aggressive and, pretty ambitious as they seek vote by vote.
And Laurel, do we have a sense of who seems to have the most polished, I guess, traditional campaign at this point?
That's such an interesting question, and we definitely get a different insight into those campaigns as we've been doing the profiles, just in terms of organization and things like that. Polish-wise, I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's all different strategies, you know, and so whether someone's wanting to come across as a little bit less polished, and that's part of their polish, you know, they're a little folksier, they're working to kind of like connect with the grassroots and be out there with folks. We definitely see differences in like how often people are showing up at events, sort of like Sean was saying with Paul Soglin. He's doing this less aggressive, more kind of supper club thing, whereas other candidates are clearly pounding the pavement and trying to get as much exposure as they can at this point.
Yeah, I think you saw a difference in terms of the type of way, you know, some campaigns are more cautious than others in the early going. Mm-hmm. A campaign that thinks of itself as a front runner is going to be a little bit more cautious. Don't say anything you're going to regret later. You know, that type of thing. And I'd say like Tony Evers was more cautious a few months ago than he is now, where you see him, because he was viewed as sort of the front runner to the degree that we had one. Now you see him more coming out with more policy proposals, like, you know, cutting legislator pay to help pay for teacher salaries, coming out and talking about the governor, using an occasional obscenity, you know, to get people's attention. That's the type of stuff you didn't see when he viewed himself maybe as the clear front runner. Now he's taking some more risks.
And I know what we're probably all doing when we wake up Monday morning. It won't affect the governor's race directly. You'll be watching for the U.S. Supreme Court, Laurel?
That's right. We might get a decision from the Supreme Court in the gerrymandering case on Monday. So we're going to keep an eye out for that.
We've been disappointed many times. Assuming we want to have something to talk about.
Eventually, we're going to have that decision and talk about it. So, yeah, next Monday. And if it doesn't happen next Monday, maybe next Thursday. They haven't set another day yet, but just keep watching.
Is that going to affect the legislative races in November already? I guess August for primaries?
Doubtful. It's doubtful just because of it. It's so close to the 2018 election. We don't know what the court is going to decide. But the court has traditionally been, you know, wary about making changes to election rules that close to the election day. It's not to say they couldn't, but it seems unlikely.
Sean, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
And Laurel, good to see you in person instead of at the Capitol.
That's right. Good to see you.
We've been talking to Sean Johnson and Laurel White, our state Capitol news team. You can listen to their profiles of all the candidates for governor at wpr.org/governor.